If you live in New York, you may have seen social media advertisements indicating you could be entitled to a payout from your employer if you have spent considerable amount of time on your feet at work in recent years. Well, believe it or not, these legal solicitations stem from recent interpretations of the state's pay frequency law. Don't see the connection? Well, we'll get there with the help of Jared Cook, a senior counsel in Tully Rinke's Rochester office, who joins us remotely. Thanks for making the time, Jared.
Happy to do it.
Well, in order to explain why New Yorkers may be seeing advertisements from law firms about whether they work on their feet, we need to understand the state's pay frequency laws for manual workers. So can you explain what the state law says about pay frequency for manual workers?
Sure, sure. So this all goes back to Section 191 of the New York labor law. It's a statute that says, among other things, that any manual worker must be paid weekly, and the payday can be not more than 7 days after the work week in which the wages are earned. Now, the law doesn't define exactly what manual worker means. The Department of Labor has taken the position that anybody who spends more than 25% of their work hours doing physical tasks is a manual worker under this statute.
And I have to imagine, because the Department of Labor has the authority to actually implement laws, that they've weighed in on this question a few times over the years. Have they had to identify individual titles or job descriptions over the years in terms of what constitutes manual work?
It's less the Department of Labor that has done so and more the courts. Most of the time, at least, especially recently, I mean, this law has been on the books for a long time, decades and decades. It was not really the subject of much litigation or, frankly, even that much attention from the Department of Labor until relatively recently. In 2010s or so, there began to be some attention paid to this law. There were folks that would sue saying, hey, you guys pay me every 2 weeks instead of every week. That's a violation of the statute. And one of the issues that had to be faced at that time was, does the law allow you to sue? The first appellate decision on that point was 2019, and they said, yes, the law does create what we call a private right of action, which means if the law creates a private right of action, that means that you can go and sue to vindicate your rights under that law. They said that Section 198 of the labor law, which provides a cause of action for anybody who has not been paid wages owed to them, that section allows folks to sue. They said, because you are supposed to be paid every week and you're supposed to be paid not more than 7 days after the week in which you've earned those wages, that means that when that day comes and you have not yet been paid, you have not been paid. And therefore, you're entitled to liquidated damages under the statute. Now, employers who got sued under this law said, hey, this isn't fair. We're still paying everybody. They're getting all the wages that we owe them. They're just getting it a week later. What the courts essentially said was, okay, then you don't have to pay them double their wages, since you did pay the wages eventually, but you do need to pay the liquidated damages, because that's what the statute says. That case was on the books for a while. There were a lot of federal courts and many state courts that followed that decision. More recently, you may have heard of a decision that came out in January of this year out of the second department. And the second department looked at this and they said, well, we disagree. We don't think this statute creates a private right of action. If your employer violates this statute, your remedy is to go to the Department of Labor, file a complaint, let them sort it out. But you don't have the right to sue the employer in court in order to recover liquidated damages. So that's where we are now. It creates what we call a split of authority between the appellate courts in New York. And that means that the Court of Appeals may have some interest in taking this up and resolving the split and deciding, okay, who's right? Is there or isn't there a private right of action?
So I've seen as recently as a few days ago, social media advertisements asking me, have you worked in the restaurant industry in the last 6 years? Because if you've been working on your feet in this capacity, you might be entitled to some additional money. So it seems like law firms are still interested in bringing cases on this despite the ambiguity. So is there reason to believe that cases can still be brought for, say, liquidated damages until at least the Court of Appeals weighs in?
Oh, yeah, yeah. At this point, it's going to depend on where you are and where the case is brought, because all the county Supreme Courts within the First Department, they're bound by First Department decisions. So they don't really have the authority to say, well, we think that the Second Department decision is more persuasive on this point, so we're going to go with them. They have to go with what the First Department said. They have to go with that Vega decision. They have to allow these suits to go forward. So as long as it's within the First Judicial Department, you know, roughly Albany area, they have to follow that and they have to allow these suits to go. It may be that you're seeing a push on, you know, advertisements for this type of thing. It may be that some of these firms are trying to maybe get some of these cases out and filed to try to get some settlements or judgments in before there is some kind of a decision that potentially could wipe out these suits. Or it could be that they're thinking, hey, we're pretty confident that the Court of Appeals is going to rule in our favor, so we're going to still go full steam ahead until we're told no.
In addition to the Court of Appeals, though, it seems like the legislature, if they worked in conjunction with the governor, could adopt new legislative language that might remove the ambiguity as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. So there has been some proposals. So as part of the budget process, when she proposed her budget, Governor Hochul proposed a change to the law, which would say you can't recover liquidated damages if you are not paid on time, as long as you are ultimately paid by your next regular payday set up by the employer. So because of that, there's a lot of speculation about what exactly is going to happen. The Assembly and the Senate actually rejected that proposal. They said, no, we're not going to agree to that. So the proposal put forward by the governor did not go forward. They did indicate that they were maybe open to talking about it more, but at least as Governor Hochul proposed it, there was no interest on their part to take that up. So, you know, the law as it stands, the legislature seems to agree with the Vega decision in the First Department and think that, yeah, we're okay with people recovering liquidated damages if they're not paid on time.
Yeah, it seems like the governor's proposal didn't have buy-in from organized labor, which is a key ingredient that you need to have to get a bill through the legislature as well. Turning back to the initial law and this idea of requiring weekly paychecks for manual workers, what's even the impetus for something like that? And as you mentioned, this is a law that's been on the books for years and years and years. Is there still a need for it, do you think, in 2024?
It's not laid out clearly in the law. This is why we're doing this. So we kind of have to guess. You know, this law is kind of a whole package of laws that were passed in the, you know, early to mid 20th century, part of a kind of a labor movement throughout the country. If I had to guess, the idea is we don't want employers to be waiting long periods of time and telling their employees, I'll get you next month, or don't worry. And you do see that from time to time. Why only manual workers? Why not other workers? If you read the statute, what it seems to me is that what they're thinking is folks who are manual workers are generally speaking going to be lower paid than, you know, executive or professional or administrative employees. Because of that, they need more protections. They may be more likely to be living paycheck to paycheck. And if, you know, you come into a job and you're expecting to get paid every week, then it can be a real hardship if you're not paid every week, if your pay gets delayed or something like that, and you're relying on it to pay bills or to pay rent or something like that. So The idea is likely, you know, we want to just provide some basic minimum standard so that folks who are working in these industries where they're probably more likely to be lower paid than other employees will be able to rely on a regular paycheck. Now, your second question, is it still needed? Well, you know, that's a good question. It really depends on who you ask, and opinions do vary on this. If you know, you ask the employers, they're saying, listen, they came into the job knowing that it was going to be biweekly. They're getting everything that we owe them. It's really unfair to come down on us and make us pay these, you know, liquidated damages. Whereas employees are looking at it and saying, listen, all those arguments you're making, they may be arguments that you should make to the legislature to ask them to change the law. But as it is right now, the law gives us the right to be paid weekly. And it gives us the right to be paid not more than 1 week after we earn these wages. So, you know, you need to follow the law. Part of the reason why this applies to manual workers only is if you look at the industries where there are a lot more manual workers, particularly like the construction industry or certain like factory jobs, it is more common to be paid on a weekly basis as opposed to the biweekly system that is probably more common in general now. And I think that was particularly true in the early to mid 20th century, especially in those industries. So part of it may have been that they were trying to just kind of codify reasonable expectations and say, listen, these are the standard industry practices. We're going to require people to live up to those standard industry practices.
If you had to pick and choose the side that you might want to represent, if you were only concerned about winning or losing a case, would you rather be on the side that is looking for liquidated damages, or would you rather be representing an employer? Or does it vary so much case by case that you can't automatically predict who might win something like this?
It's a great question. And I'll tell you what, if I had a case that was filed within the first department, absolutely, I would want to be representing the employees. That case is, it's binding on those courts. And so they have to allow it to go forward. If I'm in the second department, I would much rather be, I mean, these cases are not even going to be going forward in the second department. So, you know, if an employee comes to me and says, you know, I want to sue my employer under this, I tell them, sorry, you don't have a case. You just can't do it in these courts. Even if I'm in the first department, you know, if I'm in the third or the fourth department, you know, maybe it's more of a toss up where it's like, well, I don't know. You know, it could kind of go either way. We aren't bound by either one of these decisions. We'll see exactly what the arguments, how the arguments come out, and how the court decides. You know, whether I would rather be taking one position or the other might depend on who's going to be on my panel on the appellate division.
Right.
Which judges are going to be hearing it. I would say this, that the trend seems to be picking up some speed maybe against the Vega decision, but you know, it's a little bit hard to say something like that when you really only have two appellate decisions. That's not enough to really draw conclusions about a trend. But in the lower courts, you look at, you know, there have been a number of cases in county Supreme Courts that have gone in favor of the employees on this issue. And there have been four or five federal court decisions that also followed the Vega decision. But since the Grant decision out of the second department earlier this year, there's already been at least one federal court decision that accepted Grant, that said, now, you know, we think Grant is more persuasive. We think Grant is right. And the way that works, just to kind of give you some background there, is federal courts are not necessarily bound by intermediate appellate court decisions the same way that the county Supreme Courts are. Instead, federal courts have to essentially make a guess about what they think the highest court of the state, the Court of Appeals, would decide on these issues. And if there isn't a decision on that issue from the Court of Appeals, then they have to kind of look at the available decisions that are there and decide which one they think the Court of Appeals would be more persuaded by. So when Vega was the only appellate court decision, there were four or five federal courts that said, hey, that's the law. Now that there are these two, there's been at least one federal court that has said, you know, we think that the Court of Appeals is going to go with the grant decision on this. So we'll see exactly what happens. The grant decision, by the way, the plaintiff filed a motion to re-argue the case, and in the alternative, a motion to appeal the case to the Court of Appeals. That motion has not yet been decided. It was filed back in like mid-February. So it hasn't been decided yet. We'll see what happens. Whether they get to re-argue the case to the Second Department, I think that's a hard standard to meet. You have to prove that the court overlooked or misapprehended significant arguments or authorities that would have changed the decision. That's a bit of a high standard to make, to meet. The standard for an appeal to the Court of Appeals is an easier standard to make, and that's probably more likely how it's going to go. The fact that there are two opposing decisions from the courts of from the appellate divisions, I think, is probably going to make the case interesting to the Court of Appeals, and they're probably likely to take it up. But you know, we'll see. They may decide that they want some more appellate divisions to weigh in on it first. They may say, yeah, we want to give the Fourth Department and the Third Department a chance to weigh in and see what they say before we make a decision on it. But to be fair, the two decisions out there are very well reasoned and very thoroughly explained. You know, each court does explain their position. One thing that's maybe interesting to note is that in the recent decision, the grant decision out of the Second Department, there was a dissent. That's another factor that sometimes can weigh in your favor if you're trying to get some interest in a case from the Court of Appeals. If it was a unanimous decision and, you know, there's no other opposing decision, they may be less interested in it. If you've got two conflicting decisions from the appellate divisions, and you've also got in at least one of them a dissent saying, hey, I don't think my colleagues got this right, they may be more interested in taking it up.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Jared Cook. He's a senior counsel in Tully Rinke's Rochester office. Jared, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate the conversation.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Resorts World New York. With over 1 million square feet of space to play, relax, and celebrate, Resorts World New York City hosts more than 5 million visitors a year. That makes Resorts World a significant social and economic partner for local businesses and residents alike. Through its operations and outreach programs, Resorts World has generated more than $4 billion for the state educational system and 1,400 jobs for the people of Queens. More information at rwnewyork.com.